Na 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 na. Hey! Gotta love that podcast show. Na 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 na. Hey! Yeah, I love that podcast show. Oh, BS and beer is the place to go to get all the Saints news. Hell yeah! Podcast show. Na 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 na. Hey! Gotta love that podcast show. Na na.
Now, recording live, it's the BS and Beer Podcast crew with your host, David Romero.
Welcome in, another week, another edition. It's the BS and Beer Podcast crew recording live, wall-to-wall New Orleans Saints football talk from our studios at the Meat House. This week, New Orleans in unbelievable game that anyone who tries to tell me that they expected this, I'm going to call them out. I'm going to say, you're lying. Craig's raising his hands. He says he expects it. I don't believe it. With me today, Heath Elson-Son, Craig Wright. So grab a drink, sit back and relax, because for the next hour or so, we're going to be doing New Orleans Saints football talk, BS and beer style.
Hey, folks. All right, listen, I'm so not in the mood for you guys. You're blabbering on and on, okay? And it's enough, all right? It's enough. Blah, 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 blah. Okay, today's Monday, all right? So stop doing your stupid radio thing. And if you want to pick up where you left off tomorrow, at least it'll be Tuesday, all right? So just keep it down. Actually, don't keep it anything. Just stop, okay? Just stop doing what you're doing.
9-0. And again, you cannot. I know there's some homers. We have some sitting in our very studio. But there's no way that someone's going to convince me that they thought 9 points would get it done. And throughout the game, I was figuring that it was inevitable, Heath. It was inevitable that this is one of those games. And I got to go all the way back to like the Mora years where we got this. We shutting them down. They can't do nothing. But when it's so close, when the game's so close, all it takes is one guy to slip, one great play, one missed tackle, and they're right there. Now, of course, the Saints later on got another field goal, made it a two-score game, but the game was always right there in reach.
Yeah, I mean, how many times over the years did, you know, we've seen the Saints screw that up even when only a minute or 30 seconds left in the game after Drew Brees got what should have been his 150th game-winning drive snatched from underneath him. So, yeah, I mean, you know, early in this game, I remember thinking, we letting too many opportunities slip by, right? You're not going to get this many chances, you know. It started out, hell, I think it was Tampa's first play from scrimmage. It was certainly their first pass when we could have had an interception, right? Lattimore almost picked the ball off. And I remember thinking, man, that's the kind of play that a depleted team like the Saints have to make, you know.
Right.
That could be the difference right there. All right, so, you know, you move on, and then we get the – beautiful pass from Taysom Hill, right? Best pass I've ever seen, deep pass, certainly, that I've ever seen Taysom Hill throw.
Pinpoint.
And then you get a field goal, and you're like, oh, man, you know, we got all the way down there and installed out. You know, we needed that touchdown, you know, and then a second time, you know. And so, and that's exactly what I'm thinking. Just as a Saints fan, I'm like, man, this is just, we're going to hang around. Are we going to let them hang around? And then whether they do it legitimately on their own, because, I mean, they're a good team, or like Craig would say, you know, the officials drag them into the end zone at some point to the victory. That's just how I felt, you know, all the way to pretty much the end of the game. You know, it was like I didn't feel comfortable until that final, you know, when you're kneeling it out, basically. I mean,
Craig, I brought up during the game that I was somewhere around the 7-minute, 30-second mark when Chauncey Gardner-Johnson got the interception. I had this feeling of, man, we're going to win this game. And I said it in the group, and you guys lit me up. Shut up, Dave. Don't say that. Okay. After that 7-minute and 30-second mark in the game, there were 8 more possessions. Now, is that talking great defense, or is that putrid offense by both sides? And when I say 8 possessions, I mean 4 for the Saints, 4 for Tampa Bay. But that means Tampa Bay had 4 more opportunities to score.
I mean, the easy answer is yes.
Right.
The offenses were bad. I mean, the Saints with no offensive line, and Taysom Hill at quarterback, and the Bucs with no weapons, and, you know, a rattled Tom Brady. Yeah, I said it. You know, it was clear at that point in the game, it was a battle of attrition. It was whoever was going to just keep playing defense and not give up the big play. And how, I mean, like you guys were saying, how many times do we watch a Saints game where you're hanging there, right there, we got this, and at the last minute, somebody, you know, blows a coverage, or there's a questionable call or a missed call, and all of a sudden, oh man, we had it, and we had the champagne on ice, and oh, okay, no, we lost. Okay, well, better not. We'll do it next week. It's fine. Yeah, but the defense was just too good today. They were smothering.
You keep trying, but anyway, with what day it was on, I like that.
They don't know what time we record.
That's right. Hey, Heath. You know, we talked about the passing game was pretty pathetic, but the Tampa Bay Buccaneers were playing on many snaps. I didn't get a snap count, but they were playing many snaps on defense with five men with the hand on the ground, playing run defense. But all the Saints points basically a result of big passes in the passing game. So, okay, what does that mean? You know, we did what we had to. Taysom Hill came up with plays when he needed to. The back shoulder post route. First time ever heard that before, but Chris Collinsworth said it. He said it tongue in cheek.
Yeah, you made it up.
He made it up and laughed about it. But yeah. Hey, it worked, right? So the passing game, that's where our points came. It obviously didn't come out of sustained running game. So do we have to give Taysom Hill some credit for this?
Well, yeah. I mean, I guess first we got to give the coaching staff credit for calling the play.
that takes balls right there.
I assume that they recognized what was happening and actually did that on purpose. And, you know, like I said earlier, I mean, we certainly give Taysom good credit on the first play. I mean, that was easily the best long throw that I've ever seen Taysom Hill make. I mean, Jameis Winston would have been proud of that pass.
Right. Spot on.
And Callaway made a great catch, you know, an over-the-shoulder catch like that. I mean, let's give Callaway credit, too. It was a nice catch. Great play. Now, the second one, I appreciate Collinsworth trying to give him some credit, right? What that really was is a typical Taysom Hill deep pass that was off the mark, and Callaway was able to make an adjustment and make a good play, and the defenders were not able to make such a good play, and that play worked out. But, you know, but, yeah, I mean – how many times in the past, you know, and look, hey, this may have been a situation where I don't know that Sean Payton makes those same calls necessarily.
That's interesting.
You know, we think of Sean Payton as being kind of a riverboat gambler kind of guy, the guy that kicks an onside kick in the Super Bowl and blah, blah, blah. But Sean Payton in more recent times with backup quarterbacks, with Bridgewater and with Jameis Winston, and he's tended to play it a little more conservative, you know, and I have a feeling that maybe Carmichael, you know, that might have been a little more responsible for him saying, hey, let's take a shot, you know.
Let it rip.
Although, yeah, they didn't take many. You know, they're, later in the game, I kept thinking, well, we had success earlier on. Why don't we throw it deep again? And we kind of never really did again. But, I don't know. I mean, you know.
So there was a point of the game offensively where I get what you're saying. It's like, I mean, listen, they are stacking. They are playing the run. They're already a good run defense. At what point with three backup offensive linemen and then one of your starters is Ruiz, who's had his struggles. At what point do you start saying, golly, okay, we got this lead. Do we want to give it all back on a strip sack, on a fumble, on a this isn't Taysom Hill's fault. And I keep going back to this. This is a combination. We have no receivers that can consistently get open, especially on the level that they're at. We talked about Callaway, and I want to talk more about that for Craig to watch him get excited. But Callaway against number one coverage, not going to consistently get open. The offensive line, not going to consistently hold up in pass protection. And then a quarterback who won't consistently make the throw if given the opportunity. So to me, man, you drop back the pass and there's almost more bad that could happen than good. So at some point, the Saints are like, listen, I'd rather just rely on this 9-point lead and this defense than to take the chance of working so hard to get to this point and then give it all away. Because I don't think that they really took a lot of chances in the second half after all the injuries. Oh, I don't think I'm supposed to mention that. But after the Bucs and the injuries to their skill players, I think the Saints kind of felt, listen, we got Brady rattled. Their playmakers are out. We are going to just play this close to the vest and see if they can come up with something. So I'll open up the floor to Craig. Now, easy, Craig. Talk a little bit about Callaway. He has over 100 yards receiving.
Yeah, well, I think one of the things that we are forgetting, because the national media only wants to tell us about the Buccaneers injuries, is that the Saints just are still so depleted. So we have our one big play receiver, and that's Deonte Harris. But I want to talk about our guy.
Well, wait a minute. Callaway. Hold on.
That's right. Our guy Callaway.
Wait, hold on, Craig, Craig, I know you're about to step up to the podium, but you mentioned it like Deonte Harris is suspended right now. So we don't have him either.
He's suspended. Yeah. Michael Thomas ain't playing. Traquan Smith might not be the guy we hoped he was. Big Fish is playing again. And we have a guy like Callaway. We don't want to talk about it because, you know, he doesn't hit the home runs very often, but he's an undrafted guy. He's not costing us a lot of money, which is going to be important in the offseason. And he's drawing number one corners every week because he's the only receiver that is consistently making plays. He's got over 500 yards in the year. He's got 6 touchdowns, averaging 15 and a half per grab. I mean, I don't know what more you can ask for a UDFA to come in with that kind of pressure of essentially replacing Michael Thomas. You're asking this guy who was not even drafted to replace one of the best wide receivers in the game. And I don't know that we can ask any more of what he's given us so far.
I think relatively speaking, and you did a good job of pointing that out, if you consider who he is, where he came from, his pedigree, there's no question. Now, we can start questioning whether next year, if that's good enough to lead the Saints where we want to go, that going to be good enough? But having said that, no, 100%. There's no one. If you're grading him for what he is, which is undrafted guy who's making the most out of his ability, Heath, I think Craig nails it. Callaway, who else? I mean, there's nobody else consistently making plays outside of Kamara. The tight ends, it was ugly for, you know, we were getting a little excited about the Saints. Help me out with the backup tight end.
Well, Juwan Johnson, who hit the COVID list today.
Yeah, that's right. But I'm talking about the
Nick Vinette.
Yeah, Vinette. You know,
big old drop yesterday.
He had a huge drop. And there comes a point, whether it's Taysom Hill, whether it's Simeon, or whether it's Winston, that these receivers just have not stepped up. And I would have to say Callaway is probably just about the only guy who's gone up and made, and I'm not even saying all the time, but he has gone up and made a few plays. I remember he had the Hail Mary in the end zone. So, I mean, right now, I don't think there's an argument.
Yeah, I agree. Look, of course the conversations, you know, started during the game. The excuses started to fly already about, you know, Tom Brady didn't have all of his weapons. Well, my point to that was, and you know, we were discussing this in text. You brought it up, and my comment really wasn't directed to. I was directing it towards the narrative of the national media and poor Tom Brady and his weapons. My point is, they came into the game. Okay, so whether it was the defense just making the offense completely ineffective, or the fact that it was a hard-hitting, tough-nosed defense that knocked these guys out of the games, the Saints were still responsible either way. So don't tell me about Tom Brady and missing his weapons. We're missing weapons. We're missing Michael Thomas. We're missing Deonte Harris. We're missing 3 out of our 5 starting offensive linemen. We're missing a head coach.
Oh, okay? Yeah,
we came into the game missing a few things ourselves. So I don't want to hear about, you know, we knocked these guys out there. I don't know exactly what happened to Evans, but I know Godwin and Fournette were directly result of big hard hits on the Saints defense that knocked those guys out of the game. Now, I'm not sitting here saying that was the intention necessarily, you know, but you're playing tough defense and you're trying to lay the lumber to somebody. Look, that's part of the game, right? That's kind of, and this goes back to the whole, Bountygate thing, right? The truth is that goes on across the league. Everybody in the league, when that guy comes flying up on a player and doesn't run up and wrap his arm around him and try to do a tackle, he throws his body in. You're trying to put a kill shot on somebody, man. You know what I'm saying? This is still football after all. And these guys are out there trying to hit people. So, you know, the Saints did it. No matter how you slice it, the Saints did it yesterday, and I'm proud of them for it.
Well, let me tell you this too, in with you and Craig, I think there's an argument to be made, because we had this discussion and both you and Craig were pretty fired up about those comments after those text comments. And I started getting on the message boards and reading different things. I started seeing the narrative that I wasn't aware of. And both you guys were very feisty, because I brought up like, hey, let's not forget that they did have some injuries. And it was pretty funny. Both Craig and Heath were defensive about that. And then later on the day, as the day went on, I kind of saw why, because I think if all day, all I heard was basically a huge excuse for Tampa Bay, because you said several players there, Heath, the one guy you didn't mention is our starting quarterback also out.
Well, yeah.
So there comes a point when it's like, oh, Tom Brady's upset because he has his receivers out. Well, we don't even have our Tom Brady. You know, okay, right. not don't take that the wrong way. I'm gonna get an email. I can see it already. Are you comparing Winston to Brady? But anyway, no, it's Craig, you had mentioned that, okay, Hill, we're gonna go and we're gonna talk about him for a second. And I think I'm looking at him in a little bit different way than I did, you know, maybe in the preseason. No, not a little bit different, way different. Because going into the preseason, he was competing for a starting job. And I think that has become painfully obvious that he is simply not a starting quarterback. But I think he's hugely valuable in the role that he's playing if everything falls apart. Because I look at Simeon Rice, and I defended him in the sense that there were plays he was doing the best he could with what he had. But there just was nobody.
Simeon Rice.
I'm sorry. Did I just say Simeon Rice?
Tampa Bay.
Trevor Siemian. Thank you. I was wondering why Heath was laughing at me. But there were no playmakers, and he wasn't going to make a play other than making a throw. What I've seen from Hill is that he can, although he didn't do it very much on Sunday, he's a guy that he brings the chance to make plays with his feet and pick up first downs. And quite frankly, we should feel kind of blessed to have him, because while he's not a great quarterback, I refuse to accept that. He's got to hit those throws. There's a Kamara throw he threw behind him that should have been a nice pickup. There's just too many bad plays and a lack of consistency. But he makes plays, if nothing else, with his feet, and creates opportunities for an offense that right now would be dead in the water. Yes, what I'm saying.
You're saying is you're happy that he's here right now, but you don't want him here next year doing
well,
the job.
Pretty much what I'm saying. We obviously need a better quarterback. But having said that, if you had a quarterback and all things went bad like it kind of did this year, it is nice to have this guy who could come in. And if nothing else, it got to the point with the now you got me thinking, I've got to be careful how I say it, but Trevor Siemian, is it just got to the point where it wasn't even fun to watch. It was just like, this is just bad football, bad offense, no playmakers. And it's just not fun to watch. Now, at least with Hill, it's fun to watch and it's decently effective. No turnovers, two games in a row, no turnovers. And that's huge.
Right. So as Tom Brady and Aaron Rodgers fans like to tell me all the time, wins are apparently a quarterback stat. And Taysom Hill has more wins than Trevor Siemian, didn't get any wins as a starter. And he's got as many wins as a couple of NFL teams right now in the last 3 weeks. Now the defenses have been good, and we played two cream puffs. You know, we played the Jets and we played the Buccaneers, who, as we know, are the worst in the NFC. But you can't take away that he's won a couple games in a row. He has taken care of the ball. There was a bad throw towards the end of the game that I think all of us reacted the same way to, but he hasn't turned it over in a couple of weeks. He's been making the kinds of decisions that, you know, he's not putting it in jeopardy. He's not fumbled the ball recently. And we know that was a big knock on the previous seasons, is that he would fumble constantly. He'd have these big explosive runs and cough it up late. He's holding on to the ball well. He's not thrown into the other team in a couple of weeks, and we've won two in a row. And maybe it's hard to put a statistic to it, but guys talk about that they want to play for him, and there might be a leadership angle that maybe Trevor Siemian doesn't have. That maybe guys get fired up because they think, oh, this is my quarterback, and he just put a shoulder into a guy. I'm going to go knock somebody's head off too. You know, there might be a little bit of that following your guy into battle.
I have to agree with that, because, I mean, not just him, but historically, when a guy goes out there and, you know, puts his shoulder down, and I mean, who doesn't get fired up? And when Hill does that, I think more than anything. Now, obviously, he has to be a little bit more conservative now because he is a starter and you want to keep him healthy. But towards the end of the game, he did put his shoulder down a couple of times, and it was nice to see. So I have to ask, did you guys see the meme? And it's an old meme where Breeze is holding his son at the Super Bowl and they superimpose Tom Brady's face on it. So now there's one that's a quad, four boxes, and it has, it had Breeze holding Tom Brady. And then they had Winston holding Tom Brady. Is it, and now they have Hill holding Tom Brady. Isn't it fair that Simeon should be the fourth block? I mean, I know he didn't start the game.
All the blocks should be Cam Jordan. I mean, it's the defenses that have been shutting down.
Well, just go ahead and switch it up on me. Just go ahead and switch it up on me.
No, I mean, if we're talking about whose face should be on there, I mean, Taysom Hill didn't beat Tom Brady. That pass rush beat Tom Brady. Cam Jordan having his best game of the year beat Tom Brady.
So do you agree it's fair to say that Cam Jordan basically stole several sacks from Davenport? Just go ahead and admit it.
I mean, all of them, you know, he's got what, six on the season. I assume all six of those would have been Davenport. That's probably not true. I'm sure Davenport wasn't playing for all six of those. But no, that's the kind of thing where if you have one dominant defensive lineman, you can scheme that guy out. You can chip him, slide protection to him. You can take care of that guy. And you have two, it's a completely different animal. Now you have Cam Jordan, who had a great game. He hasn't been great all year, but he looks fresh having that little COVID break, you know, having that week off. You got him, you got to account for, and you've got the, you know, once every 3 weeks when he's healthy, wrecking ball coming off the other side.
Here we go.
And no, you know, to his credit, I mean, when he plays, he is a force. It is all. I mean, I played offensive line for, you know, decade plus, and I flinch sometimes. You know, you see how quick he comes off the ball and gets one hand on with the one hand gets the guy up out of position and just shoving him back. It's kind of scary in a way. I love it. As a Saints fan, not as an offensive lineman.
I think Davenport, I've been a fan of his for a long time. It's similar, Craig, to what you brought up about a running back that or a quarterback that puts their shoulder down and runs a guy over. When you see a defender who just takes offensive linemen, just ear holes them and tosses them around, it'll fire you up. Now, Cam Jordan, you know, he's been missing at least in the pass rush for a year and a half now. So to me, when I saw what Davenport's doing, then I saw what Cam was doing, it just made me think of how important the development of Turner is. He's been injured. Hopefully we'll see him back. But, man, I mean, listen, whether the pick works or not, I think the Saints had the right idea that if they can get that kind of pass rush out of Davenport and the heir apparent to Cam Jordan, that that's going to be great defense regardless who else is on the field. You're always going to have that good pass rush. Well, not always.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, well, you know, what Craig just said, you know, you got one. Okay. Well, we can do something about that. You got two. That's a whole different story. And so Cam, you're right. Cam Jordan has been missing for about a year and a half. That's about exactly right. I don't know if he was just fired up yesterday, but, you know, having to have that week off that he didn't want or whatever, and whatever it was, I mean, he was certainly, but he looked quicker too yesterday than he looked in a while. You know, he looked like a younger Cam Jordan yesterday. Maybe it was that extra week. You know, these guys, older you get, the harder it is to make it through the whole season. It's frustrating with those two guys though, right? Davenport, how good he is, and you just at some point you just hope that he can stay on the field. And then, you know, we follow it up with another guy, and you know, and it was a head scratcher when it happened, right? It is what has become now the annual head scratcher in the first round for us as Saints fans when we're talking about whatever top wide receivers available, and we all of this, and we get an offensive lineman or another defensive end but the guy certainly has talent. I mean, we saw it. He's another freak athletically. And he just needs to stay healthy because, you know, Cam Jordan, what? He's, how long has he been? 11 years now?
That's what I believe, 11 years.
Something like that. So, you know, yeah, I mean, he's not going to be around much longer. And, you know, it would be really, really nice if Turner was ready to step in for him.
So, Craig, these last several games that we've lost, can we now kind of admit or, you know, that combination of things that seem to work out as one, Sean Payton needs to go, and that Cam Jordan, or maybe COVID in general, should be given to all the players so that they can recover and then become superstars? Because obviously the super serum is in whatever they gave Cam Jordan.
Dave doing his best to get me to break my desk in half, just in frustration at that statement. Now, I mean, the way the defensive line gets after it with the healthy guys that they have, if you get a Turner to develop, you keep that kind of duo for years and years and years, and it helps every other level. You know, you can see the statistical breakdown of, you know, just a little bit of a hurry and all of a sudden your corners don't have to play as deep and they can play on top of it, and it creates more turnovers, and, you know, the coverage sacks start coming because now they're not able to take that 7-step drop and go to their fourth read. They're going to have to get it off quicker. And yeah, it just changes the whole game, which is why it would be really, really great if my favorite player, Peyton Turner, could get on the field and contribute to that awesome pass rush that we've seen.
Yeah.
You know, and it's our pass rush is really maddening for me because it's so inconsistent. And I can't say just because Davenport came back, because Davenport's played in other games that, you know, we've had healthy defensive lines in games and didn't have a good pass rush. The, like, Cam Jordan, we joke about whatever he had on his break, but the offensive tackle he was playing against had allowed one pressure the entire season going into that game. Not one sack, one pressure. And he beat him for two sacks and basically embarrassed him in a lot of that game. It's maddeningly inconsistent because you can't count on it. I don't know that we're going to get a great pass rush this upcoming week against an objectively worse offensive line because we just don't show up every week.
Well, I have a theory. Do you guys want to hear it?
Desperately.
Yeah. No, y'all don't recall the dismissive text that I got when I gave you my theory.
Then I'm going to give you my theory. I think it's because Tom Brady is a statue.
No. And that's where I'm going with this. Look, the Saints obviously have a type, and you guys already know this. I've shared this with you, but you know, the people out there are leaning into their radios right now doing like, tell us, Dave, the Saints have a type at defensive end, and it's an athletic big guy. When we play teams like Tom Brady, who are guys are in the pocket right there, they can raise hell because they don't have to be quite as disciplined. They can just go in there. When you start getting into athletic quarterbacks that, and this is my theory, is that I've seen these, it's a reputation. Saints fans talk about it all the time, is worrying about athletic quarterbacks. Look, they're athletic for 285 pound guys, but that's still not as athletic as a 260 pound guy that can change direction. So we struggle with guys who can move in the pocket, running quarterbacks, athletic quarterbacks. So it is my theory that it's the type of defense that A, gives Tampa Bay fits because of the type of pass rushers we have, but also causes us trouble when we go up against guys who are more athletic because we have such a big, strong defensive line. It's a little bit more difficult. So that's my theory of how, I keep sitting there just thinking to myself after the game, you guys are smoking cigars. And I was just sitting there just like, I get that we have a good defense, but why do we beat Tampa Bay the way we do? But yet, like Craig said, next week we'll play a different team and it'll be like, we didn't have much of a pass rush this week. So
I definitely think that plays into it. But here's a little bit of a counterpoint to that.
And
it's what makes it more confusing about the Saints and Tampa situation is that Tom Brady is probably the least sacked, or certainly one of the least sacked guys, despite being a statue, just because of his intelligence of diagnosing pre-snap and getting the ball out of his hands quick. I mean, he's Tom Brady, you know, similar to Drew Brees, despite the fact that not being really athletic and being able to run and all, they just never got sacked a lot. So I have to think that has somewhat to do with the fact that the back end of the defense has got him frustrated, that he's got nowhere to go with the ball, that he still has the ball when our defense gets to him, because we don't tend to have the guys that get the bend and blow around the guy and get the quick sack
right
where they were there. By the time the quarterback got back to the deepest point of his drop, the defensive end is there hitting him in the back and he don't even know what's coming. That's not typically the way we get sacks.
Right.
It's the guy still holding the ball for a while. And then, you know, and so not only my point, just it's a little bit of both, but the Saints have a way of frustrating and confusing Tom Brady with what they're doing on the back end. And part of it has to do with Lattimore. Something about Tampa, Lattimore shows up and plays.
He played great.
What it is with him. And usually we say it's Evans, because that's typically who, but it doesn't matter who he's playing. He is on top of it when he plays Tampa. Tampa gets his motor running. And so Anyway,
to Craig's point, is that, yeah, I think there's some truth to what I'm saying, but there's obviously some truth to what you're saying. The frustrating point, again, to Craig's point, is that they don't do it every week. You would think after seeing what we saw today that every week it would just be dominating defense, but then we'll just throw out a completely average game. Now, talking about the defense, I could spend time, and I'm open to doing it, but I look down and Lattimore had a great game. Marcus Williams often has games that are quiet because he's doing his job kind of as a center fielder and keeping that ball in check, but had a huge play. Well, look, whenever you shut a team out, that means you have to make, everybody's making every play almost. But Marcus Williams had a huge play where he knocked the ball out of Gronk's hand. And ironically, you had a linebacker tip the ball. Gronk still almost caught it. And Williams comes up and makes a very nice strong hit, which in my opinion, he's not really known for, and dislodges it. Kawan Alexander had a great game coverage. We talked about Davenport. On Yamada, we could talk about some more. Craig gets all excited when we talk about the big guys. Cam Jordan. I'm looking down the list. Even Shy Tuttle, I remember calling him King Tut because he had a tip late in the game. Malcolm Jenkins, I don't know, man. I go back and forth with him. He gave up plays, but they were obviously going after him when basically Grunt became their primary guy, for lack of a better – but the defense as a whole – had a great game. And I don't know, Craig, is there anybody in particular that we haven't spoken about on defense that you'd like to point out?
And it's amazing that we haven't, because the real star of the show was Chauncey Gardner-Johnson.
Right.
CD Deuce. You can talk about, oh, he got in, he's got the funny jokes about the tablet, and he got Tom Brady all upset, and he had the interception. He played really good until then too. He had a really solid game. He's that kind of in between, not a safety, not a corner, that kind of washes out tight ends and a lot of that middle of the field that he played. He had a great game, and it's really important to what the Saints do. With Marcus Williams taking away any kind of chance of a deep ball and the pass rush not giving you enough time to set up a deep ball, that kind of intermediate range to the tight ends is what guys like, you know, Brady and Manning and Breeze would check down to. And when you have somebody in the middle of the field, him and Kwan and those kind of middle of the field guys that can get sideline to sideline, it takes that away. And as soon as you take that away, you get frustrated and throw iPads and cry like a little girl.
And the thing about, I don't know if this is a product of winning or if it's a product of having Chauncey on the field. And, you know, not every matchup, if you notice some games, you know, your middle linebacker will stand out, and some games Lattimore stands out, and some games Chauncey Gardner stands out. It just depends on the type of game that's played and the matchup. This was a game where he obviously was able to showcase his skill set. But when you win and when you play well, there's this whole entertainment factor that just comes to life. And there was the Chauncey somehow was able to, like a basketball player, get his feet set and get in a charge position before Brady could move him off the block. And just stands there with his hands crossed. And what I'm trying to say is he got there. He didn't run up to him and he stopped and planted his feet and was able to just stand in Tom Brady's way. And I think that'll be a meme that just lives forever. There's wasn't a question there, but Heath, where does this rank in this year's win? I thought the first win against Tampa Bay, which ironically led to a huge slide, I thought that was the pinnacle of our season. But is this one even bigger?
I think so. In the Green Bay win too. The Saints dominated in that game. But the timing of this win and where the Saints sit right now in the grand scheme and picture of things and how we felt going into this game against where Tampa is right now and where this depleted Saints team and all is, you add all of that together. And yeah, I'd have to say that this is certainly the biggest win so far this season.
All right. So, Craig, you had some information. Let's switch gears a little bit. Let's start talking about the playoffs. Let's start talking about Miami. If on Tuesday night the Redskins play, if they lose, the Saints maintain the last playoff spot. I think if they win, the Saints wouldn't be, because there's a lot of teams jumbled up in there. And the last three games of the season will dictate that. But the Saints, they play Miami. They play Carolina. They play Atlanta. I mean, how do we – Miami, is that a winnable game? You know, you have a more athletic quarterback. We spoke about that earlier. How do you see this playing out? Miami, are they a good run defense team? Talk a little bit about that.
Well, I feel like you covered all my bases. I can just sit back and have a beer now.
Yeah, I tend to do that sometimes.
So Miami is they're what they are. They're 7-7, and all of their rankings against the league are pretty pedestrian. You know, the best things they're at are they sack the quarterback pretty well, and they defend the run pretty well, which isn't an ideal because we have a quarterback that holds the ball too long and we rely on the running game. having said that, I mean, when I first looked at this, I thought they were a worse matchup for us than they turned out to be. Their offense has the good running quarterback that we talked about, but it's not particularly effective. Their rush yards per game is 28th in the league. That's the kind of thing where if you make them one dimensional, even if we're not great against that kind of quarterback, you can still kind of force them into mistakes. He is a young guy. He's prone to that kind of thing. He's got 8 interceptions this season. The kind of thing you can work with. I'm not going to jump to the playoff picture yet, but as you were saying, I think with the Bears loss, actually, we can't take that spot this week regardless. I think we're out the outside looking in no matter what happens in the last today and tomorrow.
Okay, so that was just a temporary thing because we played before.
Yeah, there were those delayed games for the COVID protocols and whatnot. Not to say that, you know, it's my belief that if we win 2 out of these last 3, we sneak in. And if you sneak in, you know, weird things happen in the playoffs. You got a good defense, you know, yada, yada, yada. Get me the ring now. But what just looking at the Dolphins first, it's an AFC team. We don't know a lot about them. We've, you know, played against them pretty well in the past, but you know, that doesn't really matter with, you know, the kind of turnover we've had on the team. We don't match up terribly. But, you know, we talked about how well we matched up against Atlanta, and they have the same statuesque quarterback as Tampa, and we couldn't get a pass rush on him. So back to where I was week 1, I have no idea with this team, and anyone who tells you they do know is lying.
Okay, so Heath, I think Craig brings up a good point as I'm trying to remember the question that I had. The Saints, Tampa Bay lost players. They look completely befuddled. The Saints lost their players long ago. Is there some truth to the idea that, you know, you adjust to it. Now the Saints go out there and they roll out the ball, and that's who they play with, and they're going to do the best with what they have. A team loses guys, and they still haven't really learned how to play without their best players, per se. Is there some truth to that? Do you think it's overrated?
I think there's certainly some truth to it. At this level of football, I don't know that it should play that much into it. But, yeah, I mean, you lose one of your big players, it's certainly going to affect everybody else. You kind of get into at least a temporary, you know, what are we going to do now kind of situation, or, you know, and I would go back to the Saints in the past, like all of us, including fans, and I guarantee you players too. What happens if Breeze goes down, right? That's going to take an adjustment by the team. I don't care who you are. So, but the Saints all season long, whether it's coaches missing, whether it's players missing, I mean, basically they've learned to play as this hodgepodge ragtag team of players or whatever, you know, and so, yeah, I mean, I definitely think that makes you tougher overall and changes the attitude. You know?
And the reason I asked that question and brought that subject up is I feel like the Saints, even this week without their tackles, without their even Harris, you know, when you talk about receivers, yeah, we lost all the other guys, but now Harris gone. The Saints have now, not that I'm even trying to say they're playing great offensively, but it does seem like they just go out there. Maybe that's just my attitude as a fan, Craig. Yeah, we just got to play the game, man. Oh. And we got to play hard, and we got to do what we can with what we got. And
yeah.
So where I'm going with the question is did we win Tampa Bay and then go into this lull as we adjusted to even more guys injured? And then now we're not going to come back to this high a point unless we get more injured player back, but at least we seem to be playing good enough team football to try to hold it together to win some of these games. That's where I'm going with it.
Okay. So absolutely. I think if you have guys that are used to being second and third team practice reps, that now you're playing with the ones and you're getting that kind of chemistry together that you probably didn't have before. You're gonna click a little bit better than you did when you come in cold, which is, to my other points, why we shouldn't get as excited about our depleted guys beating their depleted guys. Our backups practiced all week with a game plan, and their backups got tossed in halfway through the game. So it's not really the same thing.
Agreed.
That's, which is not an excuse for Tampa Bay, because they got embarrassed on national television, and I'm still smiling about it. But yeah, there's something to say for that. I mean, Taysom's now played three games. I think he's, despite no touchdowns offensively, I think he's been improving in a lot of ways each game. He's going to get his offensive tackles back. Kamara looks like Alvin Kamara, despite no offensive line blocking for him. I'm not, trying to suggest we're about to go on a run and, do anything crazy, but yeah, you can absolutely say that now that they've had time to get those reps together and kind of build that chemistry and that timing, that they're going to play better.
Okay. All right, Heath. Do you have any final thoughts, any subjects that we didn't touch on that you'd like to hit on?
I don't know, but I would say that, despite this was a great win by the Saints, right? They came out and played, especially on defense. I mean, I don't know what more you could have. It was close to a perfect game on defense, as you could probably get. And so, the problem with it is, the way I look at the Saints right now is, they were good enough to come out here and do that to Tampa, but this is still a team that could go out next week and lose to Miami.
Right.
And so, but at the same time, I certainly think the Saints are, if they could do this week to Tampa, they can certainly go back into the dome on Monday night next week and beat Miami. Because right. At the end of the day, while he's gotten better, Tua Tagovailoa.
Good job, buddy.
Right. Did I get it all right?
Yeah, close.
Right. He's improved, but he's still not great. Miami's offense is not great. The Saints are usually pretty good in prime time. We've enjoyed a pretty long run of being a good prime time team. And the dome doesn't exactly mean what it used to mean, at least here lately. But, getting back home. I expect the Saints to win this game next week. I mean, I really do. I think the Saints are good enough right now. And we don't know, who else is even going to come back between now and next week or whatever. So we may be we'll certainly be in better position having our coach back, I assume.
Right. But, now, who enjoyed the second year in a row national media Saints versus Tampa Bay, where everyone picks yeah. Tampa Bay? And that's two screenshots back-to-back years that – I mean, it's just beautiful to see just Tampa Bay, Tampa Bay, Tampa Bay, Tampa Bay. And the way that NBC does it, it's just like there's like 20 guys who pick. So it's not just three, it's whole list. But with one exception, Drew Brees picks the Saints. Now, whether he meant it or not, not sure, but it's awesome. It's just it's one of those things. And I may be a little bit off, but I remember it might have been during the Dicka years. The Saints beat. They went 3-13, but they beat the Cowboys. They beat Tampa Bay. I think they beat Tampa Bay twice. And I said to myself, you're going to be awful. At least beat the Cowboys and upset the Super Bowl champions. Craig, any final thoughts?
Yeah. My final thoughts are that I don't have any idea what's going to happen on Monday night. And I'm as excited as anybody is. We're either going to go out there and do something fun, or we're going to go out there and not. And then I'm going to have something to talk about. So, no, the inconsistencies and the craziness, and I don't remember a Saints season like this since I've been a fan, and I'm a little bit younger than y'all, just saying. Easy. But I don't remember a single year being this crazy. I that includes, when we were displaced for the hurricane. I mean, at least we knew we were bad, but like, it's still something about this year is just weird. It's just with the injuries, and then there's COVID is still kind of a factor here and there, and coaches are going down and guys are getting suspended, and we're beating the really good teams and we're losing in overtime to the really bad teams. I've never seen anything like it. And I'm just going to get my popcorn ready.
Listen, it's funny how wins create confidence. When we were losing, it was like, I admit it. I was like, I don't see how the Saints win a game the rest of the way out. But yet, after they, and it's not that they're significantly healthier, but yet they go out and beat Tampa Bay, and it just makes you realize that you just don't know as much as you think you know. It's just crazy how that works. But the confidence is there, and now all of a sudden I'm looking at it saying, I'm with Heath. I'm like, I see them beating Miami, but it's off of the memory of what they did to the Tampa Bay defense, Tampa Bay in general, and I see the Saints being able to move the ball more effectively against Miami, especially if we get our tackles back, or at least one of them back. So who knows if that's going to happen, But I see, and then as soon as I want to say I can see a little run coming up, I start saying, yeah, that's kind of how you felt after the last Tampa Bay victory, you know. So it's going to be a hard, I don't know. I think what you said, Craig, you just sit back, get your popcorn, and watch the roller coaster ride, right?
Sir, let's do it.
All right. Well, that's all the show that we have for you this week. So for Heath Elson-San, Craig Wright, Dale Mims, the Godfather, Tomas Mauricio, and all the great shows over at the Dome Patrol Network. You know, you have the main show over there, the Tigers Den, Taking the Over, and the Premier League. I'm Dave Romero. You've been listening to the BS and Beer podcast, and we'll talk to you after hopefully a great win against Miami on Monday night. Take care.
And anyway, the person who sits here is but the most conspicuous member of a superb team of journalists, writers, reporters, editors, producers, and none of that will change. Furthermore, I'm not going away. I'll be back, and that's the way it is.
Oh, boy, don't waste time to tune into our podcast. Oh, go give your time. We have a lot of fun. I love this podcast. Ooh. We have a lot of fun. I love this podcast. We have a lot of fun. I love this podcast. Ooh. Oh, boy, don't waste time.